We're approaching the real meat of Shabtai Tzvi. Real meat. And the reason why it's meat is he's finally meeting Natan of Aza, Nathan of Gaza. He's a very, very keen, important figure in Gaza. I've asked many times. As a matter of fact, my father was here for a short visit. He found a very cheap ticket online, so he couldn't resist it. Jews love bargains. So he asked me what I'm teaching. I said, Shabtai Tzvi. What was the deal? So everyone asked the same question. Who, if the guy was a manic depressant, and he was claiming he was Shabbat Shabbat since 1648, then it might be time. Why all of a sudden people start believing him in 1665? Like, what happened?
Did people know he was crazy before?
Yes, certain people probably suspected it, that we went through it. There were probably strong suspicions by Bate Dinim in different places, but it's a very important, idea of pre-telegraph world.
So even though Nathan of Oz or whatever, what he found showed to everyone.
Okay, we're gonna get there.
Even if with that whole thing, when people still know that he's a manic.
Okay. Right. Just wait. We're gonna get there. I think the end of this week, but if not next week, and we'll talk about that. Is a very you're raising a good point, great point. Let's try to go step by step. Now the point we're just raising. Let me just finish my point. Don't forget your point. Before. Telegraph communication from city to city took time, significant time. And even though there was communication, people, of course, were very hesitant to do anything overly radical. And it was a recurrent problem that if a guy was tricky and slick and shut up and knew how to maneuver, no one really knew exactly who he was. This is that guy you're talking about, but he looks so normal. Maybe it's not him. And you had no way to instantaneously communicate with someone in a different city and verify, this is him, and be careful. That didn't exist. Telegraphs is 1850s. Pre-telegraph, that just didn't exist. So, it's... That's the problem. You're right. You want to people. Yes, there were people who were aware. There were Bate Dinim here and there. He had already visited. He was thrown out of Izmir, thrown out of Salonika, thrown out of Constantinople. It's not clear where the other places he was in. But there were a significant amount of people who knew about his instabilities. He was thrown out of Yerushalayim also. So he's thrown out of 3-4 places, possibly more. But still, nonetheless... News didn't necessarily travel. Unless someone's considered an open active threat, one bezdin is not going to go communicate to others. And it's not clear that anyone before Natan, before Nathan of Gaza hits Shabtai Tzvi, no one considered the clearest approach is to assume he was a really active threat. He's not an active threat. Then there's an Israel Lashon Hara. You're not allowed to go stop the guys in Nebuch. He's it's a tragic, sad case. People are not interested in, there's not a clear reason / hetter for spreading Lashon Hara about the guy. Okay, fine. Now we're back again. We're going to meet the key figure, though. The Kevin wants to know, how did Shabtai Tzvi garner such support? How did the movement survive his apostasy? And it did. And the answer is Nathan of Gaza. Nathan of Gaza. Natan Hazati, as they call him. Okay. Let's have a brief biography of Nathan so you understand a little better how he was able to pull everything off.
He was with Shabtai Tzvi.
Okay. Nathan's father, Elisha, was a very well-known mukubal, a very well-known Kabbalist. He printed a very well-known sefer called Magid Meir Sha'arim.
This is his father.
This is Nathan's Natan Azati's father. his father Elisha, who was alive. Nathan of Gaza was in his 20s at this time. He was not more than 23 at this point in time. 22, 23, that is his approximate age in these key years. 22, 23, quite young man. His father, Elisha, was alive, and a well-known Kobo who printed the second half of Magid Mesh Sharm. Does anyone remember or recall what Magid Mesh Sharm is? No? Okay. He printed Magid Mesh Sharm in 1649.
Elisha.
Nothing at all. Has to do with a very well-known central figure in mainstream Judaism. No. Has to do with the Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of Shulchan Aruch. Okay? Rabbi Yosef Karo had visions from a Magid, from a heavenly messenger. And the diary was called Magid Meir Sha'arim. There's a lot of very fascinating, interesting information there. Written down by the Beis Yosef, things that this Malach, this Magid, told him. As a matter of fact, there's a very well-known custom. There's a very well-known custom that the first source for is Magid Meir Sha'arim. That's the custom of staying up all night learning on Shavuos. According to Magid Meir Sha'arim, I mean it's relative. The first time it happened was, I don't remember the exact year, sometime the Beis Yosef was in Tzfat. He stayed up all night with seven or eight people, and the Magid told him that this is unbelievable. It's like an astounding accomplishment. It's a shame there wasn't a minyan. I don't know if that's part of the legend. I don't remember. Yeah, that's the way you heard it.
So I heard that. Yeah, that's the way.
I'm not sure if that. You have to check all these things out carefully. I know people like to embellish stories like this and make them more dramatic, etc. But whatever. Anyway, as we all know, it became is now a widespread custom to stay up all night for this night, and that's where it comes from. Okay, so. So Natan's father, Elisha, was a very well-known Mekomo, very respected. He printed Magid Meir Sha'arim. He also printed other Kabbalistic works, well-known mainstream Kabbalistic works. So Natan he's an insider in the Torah world. His father was of Ashkenazi descent, probably born in Poland, maybe in Germany, but probably Poland. And he moved to Yerushalayim, and Natan was raised in Jerusalem. He spent the first approximate 20 years of his life in Yerushalayim, learning by someone whose name is Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz. Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz and his son, Rabbi Moshe Chagiz, are key figures later on about this, and we'll get back to him. Now, Natan was no questions, no one doubts that he was an absolute genius. No one doubts that. The story is sort of like this. When he was around 20 or so, 2021, a well-to-do merchant from Gaza, his name was Rav Shmuel Hizbona, goes to the Rosh Yeshiva of Yaakov Chagiz and asks him, can you help me find a shidduch for my daughter? And classically, up until relatively recent times, this is a very classic, you know, if you had a well-to-do layperson who wanted to get a good shidduch for their daughter, well, the way they did it was they went to the local Rosh Yeshiva. And they said, who do you have? What can you give me? So that's what Rav Shmuel Hizbona did. Now, Rav Shmuel Hizbona, the name Hizbona, doesn't take much imagination to connect that to Lisbon, which is the capital of Portugal, And one sort of assumes, even though I didn't see it stated anywhere, that Rav Shmuel was Bana was, you know, Spanish Portuguese. That's what one assumes. Even though I didn't see anyone say that, but the name is like literally screaming it. And I'm pretty confident that I mean, I would be surprised if that's not why his last name was Lisbona. Okay, so as a result of this, Natan moves from Yerushalayim to Gaza in either 1663 or 1664. Now, in Yerushalayim, by Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz, Natan had only learnt regular Torah. He had only learnt Nigla. Revealed Torah. When he moved to Gaza, when he married him, moved to Gaza, he decided to start learning Nista. He decided to start learning Kabbalah. And again, the key dates, Natan's first revelation and the key dates of Shabtai Tzvi start in March 1665. Now that is really unbelievable. It's like, you don't understand. It means within the span of maximum 2 years, possibly as little as 9 months, certainly no more, I mean, logically somewhere between the, one guess is a year to a year and a half is the proper amount of time, but you can't, it's not absolutely, it's not making much of a difference. Natan of Gaza not only learns all of Kabbalah, all of Zohar and Kisvei Ari, but he masters them too. Wow. That's unbelievable. I mean, according to Gershon Shalom, and I don't completely rely on him in these things, he said, I mean, there were different schools of thought in Lurian, you know, in the Arizal's Kabbalah. There's the mainline approach, which is from Chaim Vital, and there's the side approach of Rabbi Shlomo Sarug and others. He claims that Natan knew both of them and synthesizes them in his own way. I don't know if they're based to say Yiddish, which means I have no way to prove one way or the other.
Is this case such a Talmud Chacham, then why would he believe it?
That is the million-dollar mystery of the whole thing. That is the absolute, absolute mystery. What happened to this guy? Okay, just let's try to go in order, though. Okay. That is the next thing, actually. No one's clear. No one can figure out what was motivating Natan. What's motivating Nathan? What's his problem exactly? Now, I'm going to throw out the first suggestion. I don't accept at all. And the first suggestion is, he was, quotes, an independent scholar, which means he learns it on his own without learning it from any Rebbe, and you could say that was his problem. The technical problem with that is the Vilna Gaon did the same thing.
Plus, if you could do that, you don't really need
her. I mean, it's a well-known fact, you know, Abin Nichnasu with Pardes, it's a well-known fact that the Kabbalistic part of Torah, the mystical part of Torah, has a certain latent danger in it. You know, unlike Nigla, which is not dangerous, it's a known fact, well quantified from the times of Mishnah, minimally. It's possible, and you can't prove it. That's what happened to Yerovam ben Nevat. But one can theorize that that's probably what that's what happened to Yerovam ben Nevat also.
But is that learning Nista makes you go crazy?
That if you're not properly prepared for Nista, then it has, there's latent dangers there. So which could drive you off. What?
But it could be a cap, so that could be technically a combination of.
Oh, okay. Just wait a second. So the fact that he didn't learn from that could be part of the problem. I mean, he claimed to have Magidim, and over here, I think it's very clear that this is one of the places most clear that someone like Gershon Shalom, a very very secular historian, is very crippled because he doesn't really believe Magidim are true, and it's sort of humorous to see how he attempts to describe and quantify and substantiate the existence of what exactly a Magid was. However, it's important to realize that in mainline Judaism, the concept of Magidim is accepted. Again, that Beis Yosef had a Magid. There's a well-known story, which I don't know if I tell you guys the story of the Vilna Gaon and Reb Zalman Volozhin. I told you that story yet. If I did, you forgot it. Okay. The Vilna Gaon, I forgot to look this up. Okay, I'll tell you the whole thing over, but I'm missing an important source. I mean, I've seen it, but I would prefer to give out the exact source for anyone who wants to look it up or who anyone may ever hear it and wants to look it up. Okay, the Vilna Gaon had a personal shita not to accept the Magad. Not to accept, you know, angelic heavenly help in understanding Kabbalah. And the Vilna Gaon said, even though if he'd accept the Magad, he would end up with more Torah knowledge, it's not worth it. Because a person, the Vilna Gaon shita was, is that what you work on? That's what you get schar for. And when you're given something by a Magad, you only get information without getting schar. You don't get real reward for that. That's the shita of the Gaon. And as a result of that, he bases it on, I would assume it's based on Zohar also, but I mean, the places I've seen it is in Mishlei, he bases that on certain specific Mishlei, Nefesh HaMe'la Malo, he says a different shtickle tar the Vilna Gaon says. If you support someone in learning, which is a very noble idea, and it was done historically throughout the ages, for the records, then you get a part of their Torah. You're an equal partner in their Torah. But the Gaon says you're only a partner in their Torah. But in the process of working on it, only the person who does it gets that scar. And the scar of the learning itself, that's shared. But the scar of Melus, the scar of Melus, not shared. Okay, that's the sheet of the Gaon. The Gaon refused a Magad, as is well known. Now, it's also relatively well known, but I guess you guys haven't heard it, so I'll tell you now, so now you'll know it also, that the Gaon told Reb Chaim Volozhin's brother, Reb Zalman Volozhin, that even though, you know, that he shouldn't accept the Magad, but Shimhan of Oven, in any way, shape, or form. So the Magad may come to you soon, but don't accept it. And it has nothing to do with my Shita of Amelus.
What does it mean, like, accept it? Like, it comes to you, like, oh, you have the option of me telling you stuff.
Apparently. We're blind men trying to describe color. Yes, apparently. So the Gaon told Reb Zalman Volozhin, don't accept it. You know why? Because today, the Magidim have been corrupted because society is more corrupt than it used to be. So as a result of that, the Malachim have become corrupted. And it's not worthwhile. It's not worthwhile to accept it because it's possible that you will, you know, it's possible it won't give over accurate information. And I don't think this could be a factor. However, you know, I could throw this in, but I don't think it's a factor because the Gaon wasn't doubting that an earlier generation, it sounds like the story itself seems to say that it was a new development in the Gaon's times, and in previous generations it was not a problem. The Gaon had, as is well known, did not really accept the Baal Shem Tov, but he didn't. There's, you know, I don't know. It's hard to know if the Gaon was exactly aware of all the. The Toldos was printed in 17. It's hard to know. The Toldos, in other words, one of the key Svarim on Chassidus was printed in 1780. Or 1780, 1783, the key Svarim on Chassidus from the Toldos. It's unclear if the Gaon actually had those Svarim or not. So, the places where the Chassidim say that the Baal Shem Tov had a Magad, that's what Chassidim say. And then they say that, I won't get into that. I'll leave that for Chassidus if we get there.
None of the stories that I ever read about the Baal Shem Tov, and I've read a few books of compilation of stories, have ever mentioned anything about him having a Magad.
Yosef, there is a major difference between what is translated and distilled into English and what appears in the original. The most logical thing is, as said earlier, I don't see anything else to say here, but Nathan overreached himself in Kabbalah. The Gaon also, I didn't have time to look this up either. I mean, I thought of it, but then today when I could have looked it up, I forgot to look it up. So when I had the opportunity, I didn't, and then, okay, whatever. The Gaon also comments on this phenomenon of if a person overreaches himself, then they will be damaged by the Kabbalah. The Gaon comments about it also. He calls it jumping. Echol Dvash Harbe Lotov or something like that. Pasuk in Mishlei. If you eat too much honey, it's not good. It's not good. And that's apparently what happened to Nasan. Now, it's also very possible, and this has been commented on before about Shabtai Tzvi, it's also possible, even though we can't prove it, but it's possible that Natan engaged in practical Kabbalah.
Everyone's downfall this time.
It's a known fact that practical Kabbalah is dangerous. No one doubts that practical Kabbalah is dangerous.
They don't do it nowadays?
Don't do it, not that I know of. Rabbi Yaakov Hillel is like fire and brimstone against it.
Are there any like people that do it?
Not that I'm aware of.
But there are people who do it.
There are people who still do it, yes. I would advise you to stay away from people like that.
Why? What is practical Kabbalah exactly?
What is practical Kabbalah? Practical Kabbalah means meditating on Shemus Hashem, and things happen when you do that.
What happens?
Interesting things happen.
Like what?
You fast, you meditate, you feel you have revelations. It's dangerous. You have certain times. There are covenants of Tumah. You understand that there are things out there. It's not just a physical world. It's not just a physical world. And things do happen, but at this place we're holding, you know, if it's been dangerous to use practical Kabbalah for 800 years that we're aware of, in other words, one of the first people, I hope I'm remembering his name right. I'm not going to say his name because I'm not sure. There was someone in the time of the Rajba who used practical Kabbalah, who the Rajba didn't think that much of. And we know definitely Yosef did. I can't remember. There's a very famous case of a guy who supposedly was practicing Kabbalah a little before the Arizal, and all sorts of interesting things happened to him.
Bad things.
Eventually, yeah. It's hard to know, and whatever. It's the story is brought in what I call relatively reliable sources. I said relatively reliable. It's hard to know which parts of it are really, whatever, really accurate, which parts aren't accurate. But it's very possible that Natan dabbled in practical Kabbalah, and that was also part of his downfall.
Why is practical Kabbalah even taught? I mean, not even taught. Like, why is there access to it?
Why is there access to it? That's what's called. Originally, that was called. There were kisvayad of it sitting around here and there. There were people who used it successfully. There are clear records. I have I wouldn't call him a good friend, but I have a friend, a guy I know, who's done a lot of research on it. And today we try to hush this up. I'm not even sure if I should be recording it, but once I got in this far, I'm going to anyway. And say that no one ever used it. It's not true. Rav Chaim Vital used Kabbalah Masit. He used practical Kabbalah. But Rav Chaim Vital was Rav Chaim Vital. You understand? Rav Chaim Vital used it successfully. So the problem is a lot of the other people who use it, they think they're Rav Chaim Vital, and they're not Rav Chaim Vital.
What does that mean, use it successfully? As you find out?
That means, yes, he needed to find out information. He was in difficult situations and was threatened by things, and he was able to get out of it using, quotes, practical Kabbalah. He was usually able to obtain information which he would not have been able to obtain, etc., by using practical Kabbalah. So, it was, yes, there were people who successfully used it. And that just, as long as we'll go on a slight tangent and explain, that's what Baal Shem were. Baal Shem. There were people who used, there were people who used practical Kabbalah. It was master of the name. The name means practical Kabbalah, but he's using these Kabbalistic names to do things. There were that's why the Baal Shem Tov is called the Baal Shem Tov. Because he was a good one. But most of the Baal Shem were not that substantial, and many of them were outright, fakers, etc. The Baal Shem, wait a second, the Baal Shem, like the Besht, he didn't really use Shemus, he didn't use practical Kabbalah. He was able to get success and results via straight tefillah. Okay, it's a little more complicated than that, because the Baal Shem was a Mokobel. He definitely was a Mokobel, and he had important chidushim and how to understand Zohar, Arizal, etc. But in terms of Kabbalah Mises, practical Kabbalah, he did not engage in practical Kabbalah the way these other Bali Shem did in the way the Rav Chaim Vital did. Rather, in other words, in terms of concentrating, in terms of meditating and concentrating on Shemus Hashem, rather he was able to gain success with Tefillah, which is an impressive accomplishment.
Was Jesus a Baal Shem?
Was Yashka a Baal Shem? Was he using practical Kabbalah on a Tanaic level? It's possible. It's actually interesting. I don't think I'm going to do it, but if I would, I'd have to say it in Rabbi David's room. A friend of mine once said a shiur, not here, a different yeshiva, he said about Yashka.
What did he say?
He said it at Centris. He had a packed, if I said a shiur about Yashka, you don't think I would have a packed house?
No.
I bet I'd have like 50 guys in the shiur one time.
You would probably have almost a whole yeshiva.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's such a cool shiur.
It's a cool topic.
It's a cool topic. I don't know. Whatever. I have to think about it. It's controversial. I don't want to be misquoted.
We are pro it also. So.
Okay. Whatever. So anyway, Nazan William Nathan. Okay. So Nathan gets into Kabbalah and he sets himself up as a soul healer. What's a soul healer? That means you walk in and he looks at you and tells you, your neshama has the following problem. Do you want to know the tikkun? Do you want to know how to fix your problem? This, and this. No, he did not take money. No. He was not. Whatever critique we have of Nassim, a cheap fake, he wasn't. He was a very high quality fake. but a cheap fake, we're not going to accuse him of being. That not. Okay. You have doesn't such a problem. It's because of a different gilgul, you have been machal Shabbos 3 times. You ate something not kosher 6 times this date, that day, all sorts of interesting things.
People do that nowadays.
Wait a second. Your neshama has problems. You need to do this. Okay. Now, he got just, yeah.
People do that nowadays. There's some people that are involved in those types of souls, whatever you call it.
Yeah, no.
There are.
Yaakov Hillel is a very big. He's definitely an authentic. He's definitely authentic Kabbalist.
Soul searcher.
And he's a very big opponent of these type of people. Okay. Anyway. The kids.
Slap.
The kids. Natan sets himself up as a soul healer in Gaza. And he makes a big name for himself relatively quickly. From no later than winter 1665 to, let's say, around Pesach. Maybe not even. Winter 1665, 2-3 months, he gets a very big name. He has everyone in Gaza.
What's wrong with myself?
He has everyone in Gaza trembling. Doing tshuva, fasting, and people are coming from all over the place to hear what's wrong with their soul. There's this man of God in Gaza. It is really something else. Now, the Arizal, for the records, did this also. The Arizal would look at a person and tell them, you have this problem. There's only, for the records, a little over 100 years between the Arizal and these times. Not even 100 years. Not even 100 years in the 1600s was nothing. It's like 5 years today. In other words, like 10 years maybe. Like things which happened more than 10 years ago, people, that's ancient history now. Things that happened more than 10 years ago, that's ancient history, right?
Before your lifetime, actually.
The
year before you were born, it's like,
that's old. Yeah, okay. Anyway, because the point is it was not that long, and Arizal's name and legend was alive and fresh. And as a result of this, Nathan gets it sounds like an echo of the Arizal. Now, one of Nathan's, you know, personal, besides being brilliant, prolific, which means he wrote a lot. He wrote a lot of quality. I mean, it's, most of it was written post Shabtai Tzvi, which means it's tainted, which means it's with Sabbatean ideas in it. But nonetheless, it's still Ki'ilu brilliant. One of Nathan's other characteristics was not only being deep thinker, was he was a powerful personality and leader. Because very what?
Charismatic.
Very charismatic and very slick and charming. So he had everyone in Gaza shivering and doing tshuva. Now, around this time, as a matter of fact, according to dating by Nathan himself, this event happened a couple of days before Purim in 1665. Nathan has a prophecy. Yeah, I knew that was going to wake us all up. He has a prophecy. And I only have this in English, so I'm going to approximate what it probably should say in Hebrew, even though I don't have, you know, I forgot to look at my Hebrew source book, which may bother quoting the official prophecy. But approximately the prophecy says, Ko amar Hashem, hine yishech bo, shabtai tzvi shmo, yariya yatsriach, al oiva vizgabar.
Is that 3 minutes?
No.
He's constantly claiming
this, that this is before he met Shabtai Tzvi. This is another one of the million-dollar mysteries of Shabtai Tzvi. At what point did Nathan start forging things? We're going to see, I think it's going to be next week. We're going to see, maybe we'll get to it this week. I don't think we'll get to it this week. There is a very, very famous forgery of Nathan's, which it sounds like you know about. Yeah. But I want to get to it properly because it's more complicated. I'm not sure where did you see this?
I was looking online about it.
You're looking online, okay. So that's like a third or fourth hand source. So it's complicated. And I'm confident that in Wikipedia or somewhere else?
It was Wikipedia.
Source
from another
place. Yeah, it's source from somewhere else. Okay. It's broad. We'll get there. The question is, when did this guy start forging things? And the answer is, we're not sure. He consistently claimed that he had this prophecy, and this prophecy predates him meeting Shabtai Tzvi by some time.
Did he hear about him, though?
Had he heard about him? It's possible. I mean, Shabtai Tzvi at this point was back in Egypt. We remember the Chalebi, Rafael Joseph. Do you remember him? Okay, he was by this guy's name was Rafael Joseph, the leader of Egyptian Jewry, the lay leader of Egyptian Jewry. He was in charge of the Egyptian treasury. I mean, Egypt was really a province of Ottoman Turks at this time, but nonetheless, Egypt was a semi-independent province of the Ottoman Turks. And the governor of Egypt was well-to-do, and his treasurer was also. That's where Shabtai Tzvi was at this time. Let's get back to Nathan's prophecy. So should I translate that prophecy for you? Thus says God, behold, your Savior is coming. Shabtai Tzvi is his name. He will roar. He will cry out. He will overcome his enemies. That is Nathan's official prophecy. Now, he writes a relatively lengthy description of his prophecy, which it's like this. Gershon Shalom considered himself a Kabbalist. And as much as I don't consider myself a Kabbalist on one hand, we'll go to Indian land. Vilna Gaon says, contrary to common belief, people think that like the Kabbalah is like, you know, over there in that corner, and you know, regular Torah is in a different room, and there's no real connection between the two. That's what most people think. And the Gaon says, and it's very possible, for the records, it's possible that Gaon said this in response to the Shahol Shah Tetsu movement. Even though I can't much prove it, but it contextually does make sense. The Gaon says that's not true. Kabbalah is depth of Torah. There is a direct corollary between Nigla and Nistar. It's not that the Nigla is here and the Nistar is down the block and they're not really connected. Nigla, Nistar, I mean, is the depth of Nigla. That's what the Gaon says. So, I don't know so much about Nigla, about Nistar. I don't know that much about Nigla either, but I know more than Gershon Scholem. Gershon Scholem's problem is he thought he knew Nistar, he thought he knew Kabbalah, he doesn't know anything about regular Torah. Regular Torah, he makes mistakes all the time, like open, clear, like really stupid mistakes left and right.
Gershon
Scholem. Gershon Scholem, the guy who wrote the Bible in Shabbat Tetzvi. So there's a problem here, and the problem is he doesn't. He's not careful in describing and you know, in showing what Nussan, what Nathan was claiming to be, you know, prophetic revelation, and what he's claiming to be non-prophetic revelation. And that's very important from a halachic standpoint. And the open opponents of Natan and Shabtai Tzvi were coming from halachic. They're coming from also from a Kabbalistic standpoint. They're also coming from a halachic standpoint. You claim you're a prophet, so tell us what your prophecy was, and tell us how you got it. And let's see, there's dinim, you know, there's ways to figure out who's a prophet. They exist.
So clearly pass that test.
So, okay, that is the key problem. Okay, we're going to get there. Hopefully before Pesach, we'll get there. That is the key question. What happened? Did anyone examine? Okay, whatever, we'll get there. Pesach or Shem, I don't think, maybe next week we'll get there. Next week we'll get there, we'll talk about that. But that's very critical and key. But the problem with Gershon Scholem is he doesn't realize that there's a difference between what Natan is claiming is prophecy, because prophecy has dinim, and what he's claiming is magidic, you know, magidic revelation, which is not prophecy. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's not prophecy. And he's not going to be called a Navi Sheker, etc., 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 for this. And it causes me here, I have a problem that I'm unable to, to clarify clearly what exactly is real, like a real thing here, a real prophecy, Kilo, okay, a real fake prophecy, a real claimed prophecy, and what was just his, you know, Kilo delusions. So it's unclear. So, but what is clear is like this: as Nathan has this prophecy a significant amount of time before Shabtai Tzvi shows up, and that's slightly problematic. And apparently Nathan claimed that the angel, I don't know, Lachara, it has to mean the part of the Nevuah, without this doesn't make any sense, but I'm not, you know, not 100% satisfied with this, but I'm going to say it this way because it's the only way I can make sense out of it. He has to be claiming that the you know, the prophecy also says don't reveal it until Mashiach comes to you. Okay? Which is also somewhat Mechudosh novel, but let's not worry. That should be the biggest question we have on the entire Shabtai Tzvi episodes. Okay, we will go on now to the next key thing. Yeah, we're doing pretty good this week. Shabtai Tzvi, who was in Egypt, hears about the soul healer, and he says, "I have a troubled soul." That was he was right about. Let me go get my whole soul healed.
The Mashiach has a troubled soul.
Wait a second. Okay, so he comes to Natan and asks him to cure his soul. Now there's a lot of, and more popular forms that like to dramatize what happened. And it's not, now we're getting into the point where there are like multiple sources that are all in conflict with each other about exactly what happened, and clearly the Sabbatean sources are you know, not going to be completely accurate, but the anti-Semitian sources aren't going to be completely accurate either. And where is it problematic, you know, period here, from a, you know, trying to figure out what happened. Okay. So what most likely happens like this. Shabtai comes to Natan and says, "Could you cure my soul?" And Natan says back, "You have," I mean, and Shabtai was, again, he was clearly sick. You know, he had problems. He was a manic depressive. At this point in time, he was stable. When Shabtai comes to Natan, he's in a stable period. Natan says to him, "You have no problem. No need to cure your soul. Your soul is very high and lofty because you are Mashiach." Now, wait, you would think, what?
Not untold
that.
So that's where all this came about.
Absolutely. Wait a second. Now, you would think, based on what we know, the Shabtai Zvi would say, "Hey, man, someone finally figured out that I'm in." But he doesn't. He says, "No, I'm not Mashiach." And as a result of this, he was at a stable point. That is a good point and probably true. In other words, the times when Shabtai Zvi thought his Mashiach was probably when he was manic. And that definitely is going to work over here very smoothly. And though Gershon Shalom doesn't bother saying it, you're probably right. Now, Shabtai says, "No, I'm not Mashiach." And Natan decides he has to convince him he's Mashiach.
So sure.
He's not completely innocent. But you're right. If you want to know, the real villain of the story is not Shabtai Zvi.
And I feel bad.
The real villain of the story is not Tuck.
He doesn't feel bad. He's sick. He's sick. Like, he clearly all...
You're right. You're right. Shabtai Zvi is definitely not... He's not the key villain. He's not, you know, what's the right words? What is that in English?
On purpose.
What?
On purpose.
That's just on purpose. Better word than that.
Intentional.
Intentional. Okay, we can do better than that.
Blade.
Okay, whatever.
Feel bad for him.
Okay. Natan and Shabtai go on a trip through Eretz Yisrael, visiting kfarim, davening places, becomes kedushin. Natan attempting to convince Shabtai Zvi he's Mashiach. They do this for about a month. They get back in this time, and this is very key. In this time, and we're going to talk about this next week, Shabtai Zvi tells Natan his life history. He tells him his life history. Reveals a lot of very fascinating personal, we'll maybe talk about some of them next week, fascinating personal episodes, which the only way that Natan can know them is from Shabtai Zvi. And that's going to play an important part in something next week. Just wait a second. but he's still he's not successful. Natan's not successful convincing Shabtai Zvi he's Mashiach. They come back to Gaza a little before Shavuos. Erev Shavuos, Shabtai Zvi falls into deep depression. Depressant. However. Okay, on Shavuos, Natan has a trance in which he says all sorts of funny things, which no one can quite piece together, but it meant that, you know, he's definitely convinced of Shabtai Zvi's Mashiach, in which he says, I don't have time, it's too late for me to, should I try to find it and quote this to you guys? It's interesting. Okay, this is in English, so it doesn't, like, it's in English, and this is back, written in the 60s, where they thought it was cute to use archaic old English. "Heed ye, Nathan, my beloved, do according to his word. Heed ye, Shabtai Zvi, my beloved. For if ye know the praise of Rabbi Hamnuna, the ancient, and the man Moses was very meek." Okay, I don't know. That was a quote. I told you that he lied, they thought it was cute to write this way. But the point is he falls in this trance and says some mysterious things about Shabtai Zvi and himself, and no one can quite figure out what it is. We're almost done for the night. Shortly afterwards, Shabtai Zvi goes manic. Yud Zayin Sivan, he goes manic, and he says, "Yes, Nathan, you're right! I'm Mashiach! Ah!" Okay, that's it for this week. That's where things get really interesting.